Yes, hello, Gristlers. We're back again for another wonderful week of chewing over all of the events that have happened in the last 7 days here in Sydney on 2SER 107.3. We've got a special guest today coming up. We're going to have Valentina, direct from Colombia. She stayed up all night just to talk to us, to tell us what's going on there. And then, of course, we'll move on to our favourite people. People like Health Minister Hunt, ScoMo, David Littleproud. Oh, gosh, it's just a cast of thousands. And, of course, we will talk a little bit about Peter Gutwine. Gosh, all these things coming up here on The Gristle. Do stay tuned. Yes, Gritzels, good to have you back again here on this lovely Friday afternoon. I think the rain has just about finished. It's going to be a great weekend. And, of course, it's been a great week if you're interested in local politics here at 2SER 107.3 around here in Sydney. But we've got a special guest here, Valentina, who's rung in from Colombia. She is in news radio over there and has a bit of an update on all of the terrible things that have been happening there in Colombia. There's been a lot of unrest. We'll go through that as we move on. But first of all, I'd like to introduce Demo Crazy back to the team here. Demo, are you out there?
I am. Good evening.
Warm lettuce. Good to have you on board.
Higgity.
Storm and Norman.
Good evening.
Good evening. And, of course, Putin's Bride. Always lovely to have you.
Niho.
Yes. in Colombia, we've got Valentina. Can you hear us there, Valentina?
Yes, I can hear you very clear. Hello.
Yeah, actually, you're the clearest of the lot. I don't know why. You must have a much better connection than we have down here in Australia. Look, Valentina, there's been a lot of unrest in Colombia. There's been a lot of protesting on the streets, and there's been some deaths, unfortunately. Can you give us a bit of a rundown of what's been happening just recently?
Okay, well, so we started to go to the streets to protest from April 28th, actually, and we've been protesting since then every day. And we have been victims of violence from against protesters by the public force. And to give you an update, since today, there have been 37 deaths, 24 verified within the protest, 7 to be verified, and 6 outside the mobilization. So actually, we also had 871 arbitrary arrests of protesters, obviously by the public force, 10 victims of sexual violence by the police also, 110 cases of firearm shootings. And to compare, like 37 deaths in Colombia in 8 days of protest, like the protest in Chile, actually, of 2019, they lasted 150 days, and they only, it's a huge number too, but they only had 34 deaths. So this is like the magnitude, this is like the impact that these protests have been having in the country here and inside and to the population, that it's going to the street to manifest themselves.
Can I ask, did you say 870 people have been arbitrarily arrested by the government?
Yes. Yes.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot of people.
And how many did you say have gone missing?
Missing more than 800. More than 80 people have been selected as disappeared. 8 people. More than 80 people are disappeared right now.
So that death count could go up.
Yes, that's a lot. That could be other people that it's also death. We don't know.
One of the triggers just in this last week has been the tax reforms. The president withdrew those. Why hasn't it seemed to have helped?
Well, Colombians are protesting for a lot of things, and the population has a general unconformity with a huge background from even years ago. So, well, what made Colombians get out of to the streets in the first place was what made people say, like, this is enough, we need to protest even in the middle of the pandemic, was the tax reform. Well, our external debt increased more than 50% of our GDP. And sure, we have an economic crisis, but people in general doesn't think we don't need a tax reform. People said we needed a more fair reform because the reform was proposed and intended to increase to 19% the tax to products of what we call the family basket. So those products that are essential in homes, like some food products and others, but also the increase of taxes to the gasoline, to funeral expenses, among others. So it's not fair that we have to pay this when the minimum salary in Colombia is under 900,000 Colombian pesos, something like $234. And Congress people's salary is something like 32 million Colombian pesos, like $8,336. So we're spending more money in other things that are not necessary. And we have, sure, economic crisis, but we can't put this economic crisis on people's shoulders. So, yes, the president withdrew this tax reform, but we're asking for a lot of other things. Well, we're also protesting for the health reform. When in this reform, it is proposed that transnationals take control of public health. So the health provider entities will become insurance. Of course, people doesn't agree with this. Also, the Colombian government issued a decree that gives it a legal framework to return to aerial spraying of illicit crops with glyphosate, which is very dangerous for people's health and for other types of crops, actually. Yes. So we're also protesting for that. We're also protesting for the murder of social leaders. Well, 904 social leaders have been murdered since 2018. And actually, we signed it, peace agreement, but it hasn't become anything. We haven't seen anything from this peace agreement that Santos, ex-president Juan Manuel Santos, signed in 2016. Another cause is that there have been a lot of massacres, and we're facing them every day in a lot of places in the country. Only in these few months of 2021, 35 massacres were registered throughout the national territory. That's a lot of people that has been murdered, and the government hasn't given an actual and response to what's happening. So we're protesting for a lot of things. So even if they withdraw the tax reform, there are a lot of things that people it's uncomfortable with. So they're going to the streets, and they will go on.
Yeah, and I think I'd add to that, signing a peace deal doesn't mean peace, and the post-conflict period in so many places can be so much more violent. And in Colombia's case, yeah, one side put down their guns and the other side didn't.
Yeah, I think maybe what I would ask, just because I'm conscious we are coming up to an ad break, is for Australians, this, you know, we have a very large Colombian community here, actually, and at Town Hall in Sydney and in Melbourne, there were a lot of Colombians out protesting over the last few days. So it is in our news here as well. But what would you like to see the international community do more of to help in this situation, given how bad things have gotten?
Well, I think international community needs to be more critical about this situation. They need to know more of what is happening inside, because the media, or actually our traditional channels even, they don't spread the information that it's happening, that everything that's happening inside the protest, inside of the violation of human rights, it's not being spread to the entire world. So I think the international community needs to be more critical of what is happening inside. And also I think the spread of actual news of what is really happening, it's what people can do to help, because when you spread this information that it's actually happening, people can see what is going on inside and they can spread this information and more people will be aware of it. And so we'll have a lot of people that it's in the background, that it's supporting the cause and that it's knowing what it's actually happening. I think the spread of information and having a critical purpose of what is happening, it's something that other countries and the international community and people around the world can do to help to this situation.
And Valentina, I think we've just got one more question from Stormin Norman. Are you awake there, Stormin?
Yeah, I am. I was just going to ask Valentina, in Australia, when we hear the phrase false positives, we think of COVID tests, but that has a much more sinister connotation in Colombia, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. False positives is something that we've been fighting to from over 50 years of war that we've been facing. False positives is people that dies in the hands of the government, in the hands of government forces. But those are like camouflage. They're hidden as they were people that are part of groups of insurgencies and all of that. But it's actually people that it's normal people, that it's on the streets, and the government kill and say that they're ending the war against insurgencies and these kinds of groups. But these people doesn't even have anything to do with these groups, but they're being killed. And the government gives to us the speech that, oh, we're ending with these people that are part of insurgencies. We're making your country more secure. We're like working for you, but these are people that are on the streets, normal guys, normal young people that it's on the streets, and the government is telling us that this is people that are part of these insurgencies, but they're actually not. So they're false positives.
Valentina, you're in Bogota, which is known for its climate of eternal spring. Let's hope that hope springs eternal for Bogota and Colombia.
All right, look, we might just have a quick break there, play a little bit of JJ Cale, and then we'll be back right with you very, very soon.
Thanks, Valentina.
Thanks, Valentina.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Viva Colombia.
Viva.
After midnight, we're going to let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna chill, look and shine. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is all about. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. Gonna shake your tambourine. After midnight, it's gonna be peaches and cream. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what is a whole haven. After midnight, we gonna let it all hang.
Yes, well, here we are at the Gristle here on 2SER 107.3. I am Starvin Marvin. And we've got with everybody here who might have to unmute themselves. We're just talking to Valentina across the waves there in Colombia, talking to us about what was happening in her part of the world. But we're going to go back to some of the things that are happening here in Sydney, Australia. Now, Health Minister Hunt earlier on in the week, earlier than that, I think, moved to ban Indian flights because the pandemic was raging, but there were some punitive provisions in the legislation, which, you know, wasn't anything that seemed to happen when we had the same problems in the US, for instance. And, of course, this led to a bit of an explosion from some of our cricketers trying to get back from the coronavirus hotspot there in India. And Slats, of course, was incensed as he tweeted from his jacuzzi in the Maldives that ScoMo had blood on his hands. Demo
Did you hear
crazy.
What he said about
How
Minister
much
Hunt?
Blood?
About Minister Hunt, he said he was a bloody hunt.
Oh, really?
And the government said it's all the fault of the commercial media who've jumped on this and talked about these punitive measures, which were in the second paragraph, I believe, of Minister Hunt's media release about these changes.
Yeah, well, just a little bit of jail time. You know, it does you good after you've had a bit of coronavirus, doesn't it? What do you think about that, Stormer Norman? What do you think ScoMo should be doing?
Well, I think ScoMo was trying to just guide one down to third man, but it's actually come off the handle of his bat and gone down to fine leg by accident. He was trying to act tough on India and accidentally just hit cricket in the nuts, and it sort of rebounded on him. I was very unfortunate for Scott Morrison. But the question has to be asked. I mean, he's effectively made cricketers un-Australian. If cricketers are un-Australian, what next? What next is going to be bad? Vegemite? Where does he go from here?
It's just going downhill at a very fast rate. Warm lettuce, you seem like you're hot to trot here.
So I think what a lot of people don't realise about the India ban is in a lot of countries you can be a dual citizen. Right, I could be a dual citizen in Australia and Colombia, for example. But in India, you can't be a dual citizen. So when people come to Australia and they become Australian citizens and they're born in India, they actually have to give up their Indian citizenship, which means that it's not like they can be over there and avail themselves of the local health system in the way that someone who's an Indian citizen could. They're actually considered more or less foreign residents in their own country. So fining them for coming back in makes them stateless. And I don't think we've ever done that in Australian history. So it's nice to hear that they're now talking about special planes to bring them back and all of that sort of stuff. But I'm amazed that it even happened in the first place, that we would say to Australian citizens who are citizens of no other country that you can't come home. I mean, what's all that about?
Oh, I just find that absolutely appalling. To me, it's not I don't really particularly care about the cricketers. It's they've launched an attack on the concept of Australian citizenship itself. Right? I mean, what's the value in being an Australian if you can't even come to Australia? Who are you playing?
And on top of that, on top of all those things that have been said, India is one of the largest countries in the world by population. Its economy is growing. And it's a vital partner for Australia in what's happening with China. So on so many levels, the government completely balls this up. And they've now appeared to declare their first innings a failure. And they've tried to put themselves back in for a second innings, saying they're going to start repatriation flights in a week or so.
Yeah, but what have they done? They've said the 3-week pause has worked, so is what they're saying. Except, what have they actually done in that 3 weeks to improve our quarantine capacity? They haven't done anything. Right, as soon as they open flights again, the quarantine facilities are going to be full again, and we're going to be in exactly the same position because it wasn't about buying time to fix a problem. It was about just closing their eyes and burying their head in the sand, which is what this government does over and over again. It's just such a do-nothing government.
And it's the absolute hypocrisy, as you're saying there. The government has been saying there's no problems with the hotel quarantine system, that it's 99.9% effective. Well, then why isn't it able to deal with flights from India regularly?
Yeah, so there's so many logical questions. What they say there. It's not quite true. They're talking about the number of leaks per person that goes through quarantine. But that's sort of 99.99% or whatever. But it's actually just 99%. 1 in 100 people who actually are COVID positive that go into quarantine, right? For every 100 people that are positive, that one of them creates an infection that goes beyond quarantine. So it's not quite as effective as they sort of imply.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting it was. I was just saying that's what they claimed.
I'm saying that. You're on their side.
I would just add to this that Australia is not the only country that benefits from its multicultural heritage and pulling together sports teams, and certainly the UK is no example. people cast their minds back. They remember that not too long ago, it was our motherland that was riddled with COVID and everything was dire and we didn't close the border then. But if you think about a hypothetical, if you were an Indian national that went to Australia and you wanted to become an Australian citizen, you gave up your Indian citizenship and then you go on to play for the Australian team, then if you're in India, you can't come back in. Now, if you're an Indian national that goes to the UK and decides I'm going to become a British citizen, then you can do that. And then in the middle of their COVID pandemic, if you're a cricketer, you can come to Australia because we never closed the border to British citizens. So it strikes me that there's a real different treatment between, it's not even based on where you're born, it's based on what's on your passport. And we've sort of said that if your passport says Australia, but you're in India, you can't come in. But if you're sort of, you know, we're in the UK in the middle of it and you were born in India, then you could come in. And I can't make sense of it. It's like a spaghetti stew. So really, I just think the whole thing's a bit nonsense. I think if we could, like, if you want to send them to Howard Springs, fine. But these are Australian citizens. It shouldn't matter where they're born, the colour of their skin. You put them in quarantine for 3 weeks if you want, 4 weeks, I don't care. But just saying no and saying you've got to go to jail, I mean, that's pretty un-Australian as far as
I think spaghetti stew is the most attractive way this has been described so far. I think it's not the only government policy that if fits
I could
that
just,
bill.
If I could just jump in there, I think I should, stand up for Little Proud and his gang of merry thieves. Because, I mean, really, it's only until the 15th of May. It's only a few days away that this ban is on. And there's
just
been people... I have people in Singapore, in the UK, who've been gone for a year and a half, and they still can't get back. It seems to be the people that have a substantial amount of money behind them and can get first-class flights and business-class flights, they're the ones that can come back. But there's still a lot of people that can't make it back from all over the world. So I think there's a general problem. And what, of course, was not working in the hotel quarantine was the fact that people weren't fully cognizant of what an aerosol-borne disease would do and how it could easily get through a hermetically sealed hotel and infect people. And I think that's something which isn't being talked about enough either. Anyway, Storm and Norman, did you have any comment on this?
No, I want to talk about the missing link.
The missing link, of course.
I want to know who it is.
We are having a little bit of a problem here in the wonderful Emerald City. We have people that there's some local transmission. A man and his wife, apparently. Names haven't been given, naturally enough. But where they seem to have been a very extraordinarily social couple, been up on the northern beaches in the inner west and the eastern suburbs. They've been, I think it's about 30 different venues they've been to. And, of course, now we have these restrictions on the Mother's Day weekend. Only 20 people allowed to come to your mother's place.
Remember to wear your mask if you get on the train or something.
That's right. You've got to wear your mask if you're on any sort of public. In fact, look, I would be avoiding public transport if I could. But the missing link, we had the premier on TV this afternoon saying she's looking for the missing link. And Storm and Norman, do you want to tell us who that might be?
Well, I'm pretty confident that it's not Michael Slater at this point.
Right.
So I've narrowed things down. But I'm wondering if perhaps it's Matthew Mason Cox, the new president of the New South Wales Upper House.
Ah.
It caused a bit of a stir this week. And if it is Matthew Mason Cox, it won't matter because he won't be any less popular than he already is in the New South Wales Liberal caucus.
Oh, that was a pretty niche joke, but I'll run with it. I was going to go something about missing links, weakest links, goodbye survivor. But, yeah, we'll take a stab at it.
Back into New South Wales Parliamentary.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting that he's so unpopular, but he was voted in to be the president of the upper house.
Given we've made the in-jokes, we probably should say...
I missed that. Sorry. Yes, totally not on the program.
Was he voted in based on his popularity, though, or was it really the other side that kind of voted him in despite his mates?
Yeah, so basically the the only reason he was voted in was to embarrass the government. There was a need for a president of the upper house. The premier put forward a candidate who was a lady, but the upper house asserted its independence, saying, no, premier, you don't have the numbers here, and we get to choose who's here. The premier's pick tried to run the chamber and got shut down pretty quickly, I think within about 90 minutes, and that's when the missing link, Matthew Mason Cox, got the gig by basically everyone else voting to embarrass the government. And Matthew Mason Cox had to resign from the Liberal Party immediately for going against the boss's orders.
But Demo Crazy, is he really the most popular person in the ALP party room?
Well, he's probably the most popular this week, in that he's got the biggest direct hit on the government, and even though he's not an ALP caucus member.
Oh, hold on. It's not a popularity contest. It's a meritocracy that we run here.
Oh, right. Sorry. I see.
Sorry, you can't see it, but like, I couldn't keep a straight face.
I just wanted to say in relation to the COVID stuff, all the advice is that the man and his wife had done everything right. They haven't had any contacts with hotel quarantine. They haven't come back from overseas, etc. So they appear to be as confused about it, about this situation as everyone else. But I just really hope after visiting about 10 barbecue stores that they actually bought one, because they've got a great chance over the next couple of weeks in home quarantine, home isolation, to be checking out all those barbecue recipes.
Yes, all right. Well, we have only a little bit of time left to go, so I thought I'd ask you, Storm and Norman, if you could cope without having Peter Gutwin as Premier of Tasmania, even though he looks like he will still be there, but he has said he won't. He's not going to stay if he doesn't get 13, a majority.
Well, this is an interesting question, because if it's not Peter Gutwin, then who is it? Because both Peter Gutwin before the election made a very clear promise that he would not govern in majority, and at this point, in minority, and at this point, it's unclear as to whether or not the Liberals will have 13 out of 25, or they will be in a hung parliament situation. That it all comes down to the last seat in the last electorate. So, if the Liberals only get to 12 on election night, the Labor Party ran to the stage to concede defeat as quickly as they possibly could. So they're already ruled themselves out of the race. If Peter Gutwin also has to rule himself out of the race, Tasmania is left without a government and without a premier, and no one knows what's going to happen next.
It sounds to me like a pretty plum incentive for an independent to join the Liberal Party and get deputy premier.
It certainly does. And it won't be quite sort of Bogota levels of chaos, but it's going to be a pretty interesting situation in Tasmania over the next couple of weeks, especially if the former Liberal Party's MP turned independent, Sue Hickey, snags that last seat and keeps the Liberals from getting their majority.
Can Winston Peters jump the ditch and become Deputy Premier?
I wouldn't rule it out at this point.
Well, he won't be able to jump the ditch and get to us in Sydney, because unfortunately our NZ bubble is also on hold at the moment.
Mm.
I just thought I'd mention that. Now, I don't think we've got time to go through the budget, but maybe we could discuss that next week and see what's happened after the wash-up.
I just wanted to add my two cents as a Tasmanian-born Gristler.
Oh, yes, of course.
Don't you have to give up Tasmanian citizenship when you come to the mainland?
I do, that's right. But look, I think that incumbents win at the moment. I wouldn't read anything into it. Gutwin wasn't popular before. But at the end of the day, remember, there are a lot of senators in that state. So if you want to get into politics, travel down there, because you only need to find 30 or something thousand people to vote for you, and you can get in the Australian Senate. And that's the more interesting part about Tasmania. Who becomes the senator? State election, all a bit boring, if you ask me.
Well, look, we might leave it.